Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. Let's kick off with international news, then we'll expand to space, before zeroing in closer to home. The threat of U.S. military action in Iran appears to be decreasing after President Trump says the Iranian regime is interested in making a deal with the U.S. Here's KCBS.
Tell us more. We're joined by CBS News Chief White House Correspondent Nancy Cordes. Nancy, good morning. So what has changed in recent days?
Well, what has changed is that it looks like the Iranians have agreed to resume nuclear talk with the United States, and that there's actually going to be a meeting taking place this coming Friday between Iran's top diplomat and some very busy special envoys, Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner, who have been sort of ping-ponging back and forth between the Ukrainians and the Russians as well. And so the fact that the Iranians are now willing to come to the table after a series of threats from President Trump is an indication that that they may be willing to talk, and you know that they're of course concerned about the threats that Trump has made to continue military strikes on Iran.
Well, the president has long claimed to be a great deal maker. I mean, after all, he wrote a book called The Art of the Deal. He pretty good at pressuring other countries into cooling things off and getting what he wants?
He certainly is good at pressuring them to talk to him. Whether he's able to pressure them to strike a deal with the United States is another question. Remember that he's been pressuring Vladimir Putin for months, really since the start of his presidency, to come to the table and deal with Ukraine, and we really haven't seen much progress there. So the question is there a deal that the Iranians can live with? The Ayatollah said this weekend that if there was any strike on Iran, there would be a regional war. And, you know, that is a serious concern for U.S. policymakers because Iran is believed to have thousands of missiles and drones that are within range of U.S. troops. There's now a strike group, carrier strike group in the region, and President Trump insists there's more on the way. So it's definitely a tinderbox that needs to be handled with care.
What is the end goal for the president here? People always say Donald Trump has ulterior motives, but could it be that he just wants the regime to stop executing protesters?
Well, there are a few things he'd like to see happen. It's not clear all of those things will happen. First of all, there are a lot of policymakers in D.C. who would like to see a regime change in Iran. That is a tall order and comes with its own risks. Beyond that, they'd certainly like to see protesters able to go out into the streets freely without fear of punishment or death. But the nuclear program is really the biggest concern. That is why the U.S. struck Iranian nuclear sites a few months ago. And even though a lot of their nuclear material is now buried under that rubble, the assumption is that eventually they would be able to dig it out and resume progress. And so that's what they are trying to stop.
Is Iran and the regime there, is that a regime that really only responds to the threat of force and force from a power that's even greater than they?
That's certainly what Donald Trump seems to believe, and that has been his approach. Even just yesterday, he said, we've got ships heading to Iran right now. He said he hopes that they'll come to a deal, but if we can't, probably bad things would happen. And that's kind of the sort of language we've been hearing from the president really since the end of December, very ominously warning that bad things, that very dangerous, scary things will happen to the Iranians if they don't bend to his wishes that they negotiate.
Nancy, thank you. That is CBS News Chief White House Correspondent Nancy Cordes.
Elon Musk, remember him? The billionaire announced this week that he'll combine his two biggest private startups. The merger will create, in Musk's own words, the most ambitious, vertically integrated innovation engine on and off Earth, with AI, rockets, space-based internet, direct-to-mobile device communications, and the world's foremost real-time information and free speech platform. Here's more.
We're joined by Bloomberg space reporter Lauren Krush. So Elon Musk is reportedly in advanced talks to merge SpaceX and XAI. So Lauren, what brought this on?
Well, it did definitely hit a lot of us by surprise. But if you've been paying attention to what Elon has been talking about over the last few months, he's been very focused on this new project about putting data centers into space to do complex computing for AI. And so he's kind of been laying the groundwork for what this merger would entail, which is, you know, using his space company SpaceX in order to help benefit XAI and to help train these AI models.
So is it one propping up the other? And you kind of wonder, you know, how is this getting him towards his big, you know, Tesla payout?
Right. Yeah. I think it's unclear at the moment about, you know, who is propping up whom. I think the general consensus would be that SpaceX is kind of propping up XAI in this moment, just because when you look at his entire empire, SpaceX is arguably one of his most successful companies, whereas XAI, you know, has some financial issues coming with it. And, you know, there's still some kinks to be worked out in that business there. Whereas SpaceX is, you know, one of the the most prolific launch providers in the world and kind of the backbone of the U.S. government's space program. So definitely an interesting pairing when you think about it that way.
Well, talk about what those kinks could possibly be, because they're both his companies. They're both headed up by him. You know, in a lot of ways, he's like, well, why can't I just put them together?
Right. Well, I mean, I, the way I think about it is it's an interesting mishmash of product lines, if you really think about it. You know, obviously, XAI has become more about AI and Grok and that, but it's also microblogging and, you know, very different kind of business than what SpaceX began as. And then I know that, you know, I'm much more familiar with SpaceX, but with XAI, it comes with its own, you know, debt and issues there. So, and SpaceX has finally been making money recently on its Starlink venture, and its revenue has been growing on that front. So it'll be interesting to take on a company like this when SpaceX has been very strong and dominant in the industry.
Do you see the potential for mergers later on involving Tesla? Because didn't he say last week that he was going to stop producing some of the most popular Tesla models and start making like humanoid robots?
Well, I believe our reporting told us that the possible combinations, because we did report that they were considering a merger, or SpaceX was considering a merger with Tesla, but the options were either a Tesla merger or an XAI merger. So I'm not quite sure if, you know, there would be another consolidation down the road, but that plan was floated. So I guess, you know, when it comes to covering a Musk company, you always have to be on your toes. These things are constantly evolving every day.
I take it even surprised you, the talk of this kind of merger. Although,
absolutely. Yeah, I mean, well, and I think we're also kind of trying to wrap our heads around what this means for the future of SpaceX, right? The company was started, and the logline has always been the same. It's been to start a human settlement on Mars, right? And so all of the choices that they've made have been in service of that goal. I think the data center project and the focus on AI might confuse some folks who are so focused on Mars. It doesn't sound like they are taking their sights off of Mars, but I think maybe some are wondering how this quite fits in with that grand plan that has been started from the beginning.
Yeah, I wonder if they feel like there are resources that are going to be drained from their side in order to prop up another company.
Absolutely. I think one thing we can assume is that it just shows that these projects that Elon has in mind still need capital, and more capital than what his current companies are generating. And so that's why I think, you know, the IPO talk is still ongoing. I don't think that is out of the question still. So I think it just goes to show that this AI venture requires a lot of resources. And so Musk and his empire are looking for ways to find them.
So that's the news abroad, an extraterrestrial. Here's something happening in the United States. President Donald Trump suggested the GOP should run elections. Here's more.
President Trump calling for the Republican Party to nationalize voting in the United States. We're joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by KCBS political analyst Mark Sandalow. Mark, good morning. I mean, it's pretty clear, isn't it, that states run elections. What does the president want to see happen here?
It's Article 1 of the Constitution says the time and places and manner of holding elections shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof. Now, there have been some exceptions to that. You know, the Voting Rights Act put the federal government in charge of some elections where they weren't letting people vote in the South. In 2000, famously, the Supreme Court told Florida you can no longer recount the Gore and Bush election. But it's hard to tell whether the president is just playing to his base and sort of treating the public as idiots, or whether he's delusional and he really believes that he won the 2020 election. He went out on the Dan Bongino show, which is a podcast from the former Fox News podcaster who then became number two in the FBI and just left the FBI a couple weeks ago, saying that it's clear the Democrats are bringing undocumented immigrants into this country in order to steal elections and register them to vote. And he says the proof, and this is what Trump said, is that he won such a huge landslide in 2020. And in 2024, he said he won all the swing states, won by millions and millions of votes. It was a record-setting landslide. Now, I mean, the facts are simply not the case. In 2020, he lost the election. In 2024, he did win the election. He got 1.5 million more votes, almost 2 million more votes than Kamala Harris. That was a big victory. It was also the smallest margin of victory of any winning president since, you know, John Kennedy back in 1960. So it certainly wasn't historic by that count. But it's unclear as to whether or not the president is simply trying to fire up his base so that he can claim that the midterm results, if they don't go the way he wants, are corrupt, or whether or not the president simply, you know, sort of like the way that the Fonz back in Happy Days couldn't say the words "I'm wrong." Maybe the president simply cannot accept in his brain the fact that he lost, and this is the only way that he can rationalize it.
We have about a minute left. I'm trying to wrap my head around this. I mean, is it remotely feasible that this could happen?
No. I mean, it would happen only under, you know, sort of a military state. I mean, look, here's a way. There are a couple ways it could happen. The president could declare a state of emergency and declare some emergency powers, which would have him sort of nationalize all sorts of election officials. It would be held up for a long, long time in courts. And it's almost unthinkable that even this Supreme Court would let him do that. But he can do some more subtle things. He can certainly call the National Guard in, and he can surround ballots in swing states. He wouldn't dare do it in San Francisco. But let's say that he went to places like, you know, Cleveland, Ohio, where Ohio was a little bit close, and he had National Guard standing all around there, making it difficult in the poorer sections. Where people tend to vote Democratic, to get to the polls. That could change the outcome of this election. But boy, I keep thinking, this is sort of like, you know, we got Super Bowl Sunday coming up. It's like the Seahawks saying to the Patriots, look, we know that you guys have cheated before with, in, you know, the football, you know, inflate gate and all. So we have an idea. The referees are going to be Seattle Seahawks. Does that make sense? Of course not. Having Republicans run election is something that's never going to happen.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Barry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.